Hey, All Work No Play listeners, this is Sam Riegel. All Work No Play may have wrapped Season 2, but it's more important than ever to stay connected. With that in mind, welcome to AWNP Unplugged, a spinoff show and podcast where myself and best buddy Liam O'Brien check in on each other, and occasionally other friends, from a safe distance. You can watch AWNP Unplugged every other Tuesday on twitch.tv/criticalrole at 7 p.m. Pacific. Or you can listen to the audio version of the show the following Tuesday right here on the All Work No Play podcast feed. Well, okay, let's get to checking in.
This episode contains discussions surrounding racism, police brutality, domestic violence, and COVID-19. Please take care of yourselves, and don't forget to love each other.
Years in, and we still don't know how to start anything.
Or finish, really. We just know how to be and exist, right?
Oh, what the fuck does that mean?
I don't know, man. I'm trying to get deep tonight. So welcome to the show, everybody. You're tuned in to All Work, No Play, Unplugged, AWNP Unpeed.
Unpeed.
I'm your host, Sam Riegel. This is your host, Liam O'Brien.
I'm also here as a host, Liam O'Brien, yes. See, the show's going so well.
Yep, we've almost said already complete sentences.
Yep.
Liam, what's going on?
Man, we're going to catch up here. But this show, which is just like a way for us to check in this singular moment in history and time, like the world got even more complicated than the last time.
Yeah. We started the podcast, this podcast many, many years ago, I felt like it was about two guys who were like trying to find balance between work and play, life and work obligations. And that was sort of our struggle. When we sort of relaunched the show recently, it was about trying to find this balance between our lives and kind of our safety, right? Because the whole world is on lockdown and there's this disease, and we were trying to find that same sort of balance between,
and we're all, you know, alone together, alone and not having contact with anybody. So it was selfishly, this was just a way for you and I to connect. And then we sort of branched out to all of our friends in the dice circle.
And none of that has gone away. There's still a coronavirus.
Yeah.
We could still get it by leaving the house. I still have anxieties and fears. I want to know how you're coping with it. You want to know how I'm coping with it. All that is still true, but it seems like it doesn't fucking matter anymore because now there's this other thing where the world exploded and everyone is talking about equality and black lives and the police and what it means to be American and all sorts of stuff that is way more important in a way than just like, how are you coping with Zoom meetings this week, yeah, Liam?
Yeah, and we've been talking about like what we've been doing to pass the time. And all I've been doing for the last week is radiating anxiety and reading as much news as I can and trying to listen and learn from people who are at the forefront of the new reality that is the old new reality that is vomited out on top of us. First off, before we do that, are you okay? Are you okay?
Oh, me?
Yeah, buddy.
Oh, you know me. I'm always okay. I'm as good. I'm as good as you could be in this situation. Like you, I've been super distracted, super anxious, super watching and reading everything I can, and wondering how we should probably also get out of the way right at the top of the show. If you're just tuning in, we are super duper pro Black Lives Matter. You should, if you are not, you might not like this.
Yeah, maybe watch something else.
Yeah, but we are. And so I've been trying, and we've all been trying to do what we can to donate and amplify and listen and engage and protest in whatever way we can. That's what I've been doing. And it's super stressful because I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think from the peanut gallery that you and I are in on all of this, like there's an overwhelming urge to like help or make things better. And I'm sure there are ways that we can, but it just feels like pig on roller skate. I just feel so ineffectual and dumb half the time. So I'm really just trying to absorb and, yes. and understand better.
I think that's the thing too. I feel the same way. Dumb, ineffectual, wanting to do more, but it's also like, doesn't fucking matter what I think. Kinda. Like yeah. I want to do my part. But really this moment and for the next whatever half hour, however we're going to do this, we are two people who feel very passionately about this, but are not authentic about it or expert. I mean, we're not like authentic experts about it. We have not experienced what people are protesting against. We don't experience racism ever in our lives. And so to sit here for an hour and just you and me talk about how we're stressed out about this is... it's not going to work. I mean, no. like I have stuff to say, but nothing that really matters.
Nothing that matters. And like the one thing that still is going from the beginning of this version of whatever this is, our not show, is that we're just trying to deal with what's coming at us, the world around us. And the world has been altered, a great deal in just a week. And in fact, we recorded a different episode of this show and we've shelved it because it just feels inconsequential to the gravity of what's going on in the world.
Yeah. I mean, we still want to check in with our friends and are going to be doing that tonight on this show. But we recorded an episode that was supposed to play last week. And just to put sort of a timestamp on this, it's been about 2 weeks and a couple days since George Floyd was murdered. And so for the last couple weeks, we've been sort of wondering what our voices can add to this. Not much. And so we took an episode that we shot and kind of deleted it. And we're starting over from scratch. And we have a friend who's going to come up who can speak much more truthfully about these matters than we can.
And you know, we always, I think the loose intention for the show was to make our way slowly. We're like, we're just going to be trapped at home for some indefinite amount of time. And we're going to make our way through the cast of Critical Role. You know, we'll go through each friend and then we're going to branch out to other close friends of the show. So the guest we're about to have on was one of those people that once we made it through our dork circle, we were going to extend out. But since this show is kind of a time capsule, it seems dumb to just go on business as usual with this show. Not that we have any format, but anyway, we have invited Kari Payton, a longtime friend of ours from working in the voiceover industry here in Hollywood, and obviously a beloved guest of the show on Critical Role.
Plays the Shakasta on the Critical Role. He's an on camera actor on The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Yes. The Walking Dead.
I've never seen it.
That's okay. That's
he's
okay.
On. There he is, Kari Payton. Everyone. Yes.
Am
yes,
I? Hey.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I've never watched your show.
That's all right. You know what? There's a lot going on in the world. The beautiful thing, it is literally recorded for you to watch, you know, whenever you have the time.
That's a very kind perspective to have. He doesn't know the Lord of the Rings. He doesn't know any kind of nerd culture stuff in general.
These things happen. You know, fortunately there are people that do that are keeping me employed. And, you know, and it's going to be there whenever you may feel the need.
You know what? Not to hijack this or anything, but pitch me on it. What's it about?
Oh, you know, let me tell you. I want you to, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, what's his name? The guy who played MacGruber. What was that? Will Forte. Yes, yeah. Will Forte. When he was... he was on Parks and Rec, and he was trying to get them to put all of the midnight movies, not those vampire kids. Put them all in the time capsule for the city. And he was like, let me just pitch it to you. We see a deer drinking crystal clear water. Oh my God, it's just so amazing, you know. Yeah, everything about the movie was just perfect. Yeah. No,
that's pretty good Forte.
We stumble across, we stumble across a young girl, barely out of elementary school. No. It's a lovely show, actually, and I think if you watched 5 minutes of it, it would suck you in. The first 5 minutes or so are so quietly still. It really has stuck with me all these years, and this was before I was even on the show. I didn't watch it until it was maybe 3 years in, or 3 seasons in, and so of course I ended up staying up all night. I had a daughter who was newly born at that time, and so I was up anyway. Right. I am very happy to be working on a show that I actually do enjoy
Cool. Hey Kari, thank you for joining us tonight. Dude, it's good to see you.
I love you guys, and I feel so grateful that I get these moments to work with you guys and spend some quality time, because I really do. I think the world of you guys, and I have so much fun, and I just feel like I don't know. I just feel very lucky. I feel very lucky, and I'm lucky to be a part of this crazy fucking thing that you guys have started. So thanks for having me.
You're very much a part of it. And thanks.
Only made it better.
Yeah, for sure. Only made. Are it you? Better. By the way, are you like on the West Coast right now? Are you elsewhere?
I am on the West Coast. I am here. I am here. I finished shooting The Walking Dead, which we shoot in Atlanta, Atlanta, Georgia, and we finished in November.
Okay.
And just before Thanksgiving. Exactly. Yep. Just before Thanksgiving. So. So I got
back in the normal times.
Exactly. Got back to the regular stuff, and then
that's great.
And then about 3 weeks before I was supposed to head back, all hell broke loose, and I have been in lockdown mode, you know, pretty tight. Mm. You know, yeah. I have a loved one who's actually very who has a lung condition, and so I have been on lockdown. I just to make sure that they're okay. I literally haven't been out. I guess it started to loosen a bit in the last week or so, it feels like it's starting to loosen up
a little bit, although for no reason.
People are like,
I guess it's over.
Yeah. I always love a good protest. And these have been incredibly important, but I couldn't bring myself to make that decision to step out there just to keep my circle, safe. But we
know a couple other people too who have that situation. Like I go to the grocery store now, gloved up, masked up, get in and get out, that kind of thing. There's different versions of that, but I know a couple of people who like, they have somebody who is compromised in some way.
Yeah.
And it's just that much harder.
It's a very scary thing, you know, to see, because there are a couple of people that I know who have contracted coronavirus. And the thing is that it takes your lung capacity out, you know. Mm-hmm. And to see a very healthy person who when you can't breathe, it's one of those things that you can't help but panic. Mm-hmm. Breathing, I mean, it's different from pain. Mm-hmm. If you're even a few moments underwater a little too long is a cause for panic. We all experience pain on different levels, and even if we're in excruciating pain, that's something that we at least have dealt with before. But the not being able, literally not being able to suck in a breath, is um You know, that's what we're talking about with coronavirus, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's super scary. Still very much real, very much out there.
Very much real. Very much real.
And I remember at the beginning of the arc of this thing in America, at least, that people were saying, you know, if we do the right thing right now, the curve's going to flatten out and everything will go down. And people will mistakenly say, bah, there was nothing to worry about. See? And walk right back into it. And like and experts were saying, that's our best case scenario is for us to flatten this and have everyone think that it was horseshit when it was us being as careful. And I, you know, anyone who's listening to this, I've joked on a past episode that we were, you know, I'm not getting into politics on this. It gets harder and harder, dude.
Sure.
With every passing week. If you got to go out and earn a living. We all have to get food, but if you can avoid going to a kegger on the beach, maybe do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not done. This is not done. This could be months. This could be into 2021. So,
and we're seeing as much as you can. That second spike happen, you know, and I'm afraid there's going to be a third spike now because people were so passionate and felt like they had to get out into the street. And, and I believe that there is a great deal of good that is going to come out of these protests, but there's also going to be a price that we pay for it. You know, I'm hoping that there were a lot of people out there wearing masks, you know, and sure. Maybe that'll mitigate it a little bit, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. We're going to wait for this 2 to 3 week incubation period.
My neighborhood just had a family friendly, socially distant rally where my wife actually organized it. We went out on the sidewalk and we drew with chalk. We drew circles every like 10 feet down the sidewalk. And so each family could go and sit in or stand in one of those circles. And then 10 feet later, there was another family. And 10 feet later, there was another family. And we lined the whole street. And got cars to honk and held up signs and stuff like that. So that was it. That was as safe a rally as I thought I could go to.
You know what? Every little bit counts. You know what? In my the only time that I've gone out, is to go for a run every other day in the morning, and I fucking hate to run. Okay. I'm like, you know, halfway through every run I've ever done in my life, I'm like, where am I going? Why am I doing this? You know,
it hurts.
I'm running in a circle for, you know what I mean?
More and more every year.
I was like, I always need to incorporate a ball of, you know, basketball or something, you know, something to tennis to that's usually some goal at the end of it. I love to hike. I think it might be because I know that there's going to be a view, you know, or something but for some reason, running for me, I just fucking hate it. But during, you know, this lockdown, it was like, I'm going to get up early in the morning, you know, and just for my own self-care, I gotta do something. And so that's what I was doing. And then, one day I go running in the neighborhood and I run, maybe 100 yards and someone has scrawled out in chalk, Black Lives Matter. And then I ran another, you know, quarter of a mile and it said justice for Floyd. And I ran another couple of miles and it says no justice, no peace. And this all started when Ahmaud Arbery went running in his neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was running in my neighborhood. It could have easily been me, and when I started running because we were on lockdown, and that murder occurred, you know, I was like, it was a very emotional, you know, thing for me, thinking to myself, well, shit, you know, I got to do something, you know, and I would. And I would meet a friend of mine to run with me, socially distant run, and they're not black, and I would jokingly call them my bulletproof vest.
Oh boy,
you know, but But I was running by myself this day, and it was a big deal to me to run through my neighborhood and to feel like I was not like a black man running in a neighborhood. I was just a man. And that there was, and that it was literally scrawled on the street that I could run these streets and not worry. And I know it was probably, you know, and maybe it was like 90% true this time, who might drive through the neighborhood and think otherwise, but it was the most, it was the most communal I have felt while being alone. If that makes any sense, I can feel community. Mm-hmm. Even while I was alone, even while I was unprotected, I felt the community, you know, that felt like I was not a threat at first, you know? And the thing is, you know, I'm a pretty, you know, easygoing guy, affable guy, I would say. Definitely. You know, I can pretty much talk to anybody, but when I have had my stops with police officers, not always, but most of the time, I see them see me as a threat first. Hmm. And then I disarm them. It's like that's not like a misnomer or for me to say. I literally know that they come at me with a certain amount of intimidation and aggression, and I disarm them. And by the time they talk to me, then they no longer see me as a threat. I may or may not still get the ticket or whatever, but they've been disarmed by their interaction with me. But upon first seeing me, they are armed. They are armed, and the difference is that when I get pulled over or have gotten pulled over, I guess before there were I think it was three times before I started asking people if this was their experience, but they would cops kept asking me for like, I don't know, I rolled through a stop sign, I think. One said that I had my light was, I had a tail light that was out, and I had a tail light that was out at one point, and I got confused, and turned out there was nothing wrong with my tail light. But they always ask me if I've got any warrants. It was a weird question. They ask me, you got any warrants? If you got any warrants, you might as well tell me now.
They always ask you that, or just this one time?
No. At least three times. At least three Jesus. Times.
And, I mean, I've been pulled over, and I have never been asked that question.
Nope. Not a single time.
It's an odd thing to have asked of you. And you know, after a while, I'm like, is this everyone's experience? And this is the response I get, is that no, that's not what's happening to me. And the thing is that, you know, they check me out. Course I don't have any warrants, I'm not, you know, I'm clean or whatever, and they let me go, you know, I have successfully disarmed them, you know. Mm-hmm. whether they were coming with more aggressive or less aggressive in those moments, I was realizing is that I am a black guy on the white side of town, you know, where I happen to live, and they look for a car that's not so nice, or a guy who doesn't look like he's supposed to be in the area, and they pull him over just to see, you know what? Because they got a quota of arrests and tickets to make, mm-hmm. you know, and the problem is that when I'm a guy who looks like he's in a place that he's not supposed to be, you know, and people like me get pulled over more often, then you know, you start to get agitated. And if you get agitated with police and you're like, you're treating me wrong, and then they say, listen, why are you getting so agitated? And they're like, that makes me suspicious. That makes me a suspicious person. Instead of realizing that the history of my culture and my people, I have every reason to be agitated, you know, in that situation. If four other bored cops pull up alongside, you know, because you pulled me out of the car because I'm not cooperating, whatever that means, you know, and I start to get angry because this is a ridiculous situation. If there's no body cam, it's my word against theirs,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I'm saying I can de-escalate situations. I'm good at it. I know how it's not anything that I've learned. It's just some the way that I am. Everybody's not like me, you know, and everybody shouldn't have to be like me.
Absolutely not. You shouldn't have to be a charming actor to survive.
No.
Yeah.
Here's the last part of that story I'll tell you, because the last time I got pulled over, I drive a much nicer car than I used to. And I forgot to pay my registration. My registration. That's why they pulled me over. I actually knew why they pulled me over. I was like, you know, I needed to take care of this. Coming back from Atlanta, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, but I knew it was a ticket. And then I go to DMV and you pay like a nominal fee or whatever. And I pull over and the two cops get out of the car. I roll down my window. They tell me to roll down all my windows and to turn off my car. And then as they're coming up to me, they say, whose car is this? Do you know the owner?
Wow.
And my whole thing is that it didn't matter, you know, where I got, you know, in life, you know,
yeah.
it actually didn't matter the car that I drove, you know, it was that the first thought wasn't that, you know what, this is a busy, successful guy who maybe forgot to pay his registration. It was where'd you get this car? It obviously isn't yours. And when they came back, they were very apologetic. You know, they were almost apologetic. They didn't apologize, but they came back with a very different demeanor, as if they felt like they'd made a mistake. And the point that I'm trying to make with all of these stories is that there is a culture in policing that is adversarial, at least when it comes to people who look like me, because mm-hmm. I'm a very disarming fellow. I've said it many times. I can de-escalate a situation. And I also, and this is me not doing anything, not having anything. So if it happens to me, it absolutely happens to the regular guy out there, mm-hmm. you know?
Can I tell you? It absolutely happens to
them.
Yeah.
And the only reason that all of this is happening now is that there are cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
Because the only difference between the Catholic Church and their scandal with priests and pedophilia is that when those kids grew up, people started to believe them. Black men have been grown up and have told these stories forever. And the only reason we've been believed right now is because there is visual evidence.
That's what's happening right now. Suddenly a metric ton of it.
But that's what's happening in this world. And we're getting pushback, because when you have, just like the Catholic Church, when you have a monolithic structure that everyone has been told you should trust implicitly. Weren't we supposed to trust priests implicitly for so long? Isn't that how we've been told to you do what a police officer says, no matter what? And the thing is that police also believe that. You should do what I say no matter what, even though over the course of my life and the course of the lives of my ancestors, they have taught us not to do that, not to trust them. So if we get a little belligerent and they want to put cuffs on you for no reason, is it safer to do what they say? Or is it safer to say no? You call your superior, call somebody else. Don't put me in cuffs. Because then I have no more control over my life. And from what history has told me, the history of my people has told me, is that we don't end up well when you guys are in charge of us. And then we end up getting taken to jail because we're resisting arrest, you know, if we were pulled over for a taillight. And this is how this is how a cycle of prison and keeping a certain group of people down, you know, keeps them down. It's a hard thing for a police officer to have to come to grips with, that you are not implicitly trusted. We have to change the way you think about yourself, because maybe not you personally, but this huge structure that has been built over time has abused the trust. So you don't get that anymore. You know, you don't get to be able to put hands on another human being anymore without exhausting every possible other option, because you've abused it for so long. My brother is named after my mom's cousin. I never met my mom's cousin because my mom's cousin was shot in the street by a man who in broad daylight. But my cousin was black and he was white, and the man never saw a day of jail. These stories aren't made up, and these stories didn't just start happening. They're things that we have dealt with, and we have heard the stories throughout our culture and our personal histories. And so we have to start the conversation from there. You know, and I get it. I see the cops that are upset because they're not being respected, you know, and they're acting like, you know, we're all the worst. And it's like, yeah, that's how it feels. That's how it feels. You guys have been feeling it for a couple of years, you know, maybe, or maybe you guys have been really feeling it for the last couple of weeks. You know, This is more than a lifetime of what we've been feeling, and thankfully these video cameras are finally authenticating what we've been saying for so many years, and so this explosion of emotion is happening.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What's new, I think, and you know, something I've seen a lot as I've really just tried to read and listen this past week is like suddenly. White people have realized or care, and where was this before? And that's absolutely right. And I wonder, like, what's the new thing? One of the new things is that suddenly there's activism in the streets again, except that everyone on the street has a camera in their hand, every single one. So they're like amorphous masses of people. Everyone's got a camera, and in a short period of time, everything was filmed. And maybe it's just wishful thinking. I feel like in the duration of the last week, I'm seeing a little bit less of outright things that, you know, make me you know, nauseous to see.
Yeah.
And it might be that that it's a reaction to, oh crap, everything is on camera for the first time ever. Reel it in. But maybe that's wishful thinking.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think also from like an outsider's perspective, you know, everything that you're saying, I think most of us, many of us on some level have known that this is the case. Like theoretically though, like, you know, it's been a stand-up comedy joke for years. Like, you know, a black man can't catch a cab south of 110th sure. Street or whatever. Like it's something that's known, but it's a theory.
Exactly. It was theory and you haven't felt it. This is human nature, man. I just burped. Oh, that felt good.
Oh, yeah.
Carbonation, ladies and gentlemen.
Is that a generic LaCroix ripoff?
No, yes, it is. It is Spindrift.
Sure.
I got it at Trader Joe's.
I don't know if we're allowed to say any of these things. It doesn't matter.
Oh, crap. It is blip, blip. I got it in here. There was a scandal in the NFL. A running back named Ray Rice, knocked his girlfriend out in an elevator, knocked his girlfriend out in the elevator, and there was video of him, like, dragging her, like, unconscious body out of the elevator. For the longest time, that's what we saw, and he got and they were going back and forth about what they should do, how long the suspension should be. And they were like, and people were like, they knocked him. She got knocked out. That, you know, he's a big dude knocking out a woman. That's not cool. But the thing is that Ray Rice is a football player, but demeanor wise, he didn't come off that way. And then another video came out, and it was inside the elevator, and you saw him hit this woman in the face, and her drop to the floor. We all knew that it happened. Mm-hmm. We all knew that it happened,
but we didn't see it.
But you really don't believe it. You're like, mm-hmm. maybe it was a scuffle, you've watched this guy and rooted for him, and you just don't want him to be that guy, you know, and you're hoping mm-hmm. that maybe it wasn't the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And then you see it.
Yeah.
And something changes and you realize it's worse than I thought it was.
Well, and it's visceral what we're seeing.
It's visceral. And this is what people have been living
and we're just simulating it by seeing all these videos.
Listen,
and I think what you're saying is right about, like, you know, you want this guy, you give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, I think that's how people felt about police. You know, you give them the benefit of the doubt or whatever.
Hard job.
It's a hard job. Very stressful. You know, they're putting themselves in harm's way, protecting us, all that stuff. But when you see something like this, it's like, whoa. And then the crazy part is, you know, maybe there's still a percentage of people who, even after seeing it, don't believe it. Yeah. Or think that it was faked or propaganda or, you know,
you
craziness.
You don't want to believe it. You don't want to believe it. And here's the thing. Even the good cops don't want to believe it. It is so hard to think that you're the good guys and realize you're not. It is a hard thing for your brain to get around. And I see that pushback, but it's even more important that we say it again and again, because eventually it's going to sink in, but they're not going to do it on their own. Mm-hmm. You know, because when George Floyd died, his life was robbed from him. He was murdered in that moment. But the police department in Minneapolis and the police union in Minneapolis stole George Floyd's life, they're also stealing the life of that officer who had 18 complaints against him and was still somehow the lead officer, the officer in charge of three other officers in that situation, because the police themselves want to turn that a blind eye to it. They don't want to believe it. So because we are going to get them to start believing when we have complaints on officers, when it goes from five complaints or something or 10 complaints, at some point you're going to have to say, you know what? You need to be disciplined. You're not going to be in charge of other officers. You've got a problem that you've got to learn to deal with. It shouldn't get to 15, 18, and they keep looking the other way until we see a video that's 8 minutes long of him snuffing someone's life out.
Yep.
They failed George Floyd. They failed that officer because they taught him to be that way. They taught him that his actions don't matter, that he'll that it's like a video game and he just gets another life. Mm-hmm. And now he doesn't. That dude's going to prison. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have to. But the system let him.
Yeah, if he'd made a mistake one time. And I'm not taking away
his, obviously he is culpable for his actions.
Yeah, but if he had been slapped on the wrist earlier or something.
That's what exactly. I'm saying. Yeah. If he had erred early in his career and someone said, back the fuck up, that's not okay, never again. But that didn't happen.
And if we do anything with this moment, if we can get a good cop to do that, that's all. If we just got him to do that, this paradigm will have shifted in an incredible way. But even getting that, which sounds crazy, is like, we just want you to, when someone, you know, is incredibly abusive, to be disciplined for it.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like a big ask.
It is not a big ask. That's the thing. It's not a big ask.
It's not.
It is only decent. It is only decent. There's a video going around where a woman said, you know what, after 400 and something years of black people going through this, you know what, white people need to be so happy that we are looking for equality and not revenge. Yeah. So many times we ask for the least just to be treated as human beings. At the end of the day, that's what we're asking for, and that's what we want, and that's what we get passionate about. Is we're not asking for more, but you know, this is that moment. This is that moment, and we are it's an explosive moment.
It really is. And do you feel hope in this moment? Do you feel like, I know there's a chance, but do you think it's going to happen? Do you think there's going to be some progress, a page turned?
You got to have hope, man.
Okay.
I mean, if you don't have hope, you got nothing. You got to have hope. I am so hopeful, and yet at the same time, I am not Pollyannish about the situation. There have been riots about how black people have been treated in this country for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And those people who protested and rioted then, you know, fought passionately then, and they got us to here. Now we're here in a very incredible moment.
Whole world's paying attention.
The whole world is paying attention. The cameras are on. I liken it to a volcano, you know, and people look at when it erupts and when it spouts and when lava is thrown in the air and there's this destruction. But there has been pressure building for years under there this entire time. And it had no choice but to burst out some way. So that explosion, that volcanic eruption is incredible and exciting. And people see the protests and the rioting, and they think, oh my God, what's happening now? That's the big show. Now comes the real work. Now that slow, hot, molten lava begins to build something new. And it starts ugly and crackly and turns into incredible life-giving soil. And it's what we all live on. And whether you realize it or not, what is happening is natural and necessary for us to grow as a people and as human beings. And so I am hopeful, but I know that this is slow, hot, burning work that continues to be done, you know?
Yeah, so it's not over in a week or 2 weeks or
no.
3 weeks.
No, it's gonna, no, no, it's not.
And it's
not, you know, a straight line. It's going to be messy.
It's frustrating. It's continually frustrating. I mean, earlier you started off by talking about how, you know, you haven't left your house because you're trying to protect loved ones from coronavirus. I mean, that's a daily struggle. That's a daily thing that you have to do to keep that person safe. And you even said, like, you know, if that person gets coronavirus, they can't breathe. And it's like we all have to do that for each other, or else another black man is going to not be able to breathe.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to continue to check in and make sure that everyone is safe and that everyone is protected.
Yeah.
It's not going to be over in 2 weeks.
It's not going to be over in 2 weeks. And that's not the way this works. To think that this is going to happen, you know, with the snap of a finger. I mean, and things have changed. You know, the Breonna Taylor's law, you know, was passed today.
Did they pass it?
Yeah, they passed it. They passed
it. That's great.
No knock warrants are a thing of the past. And
that's beautiful.
And so things are changing and incredible things are happening, but the changing of the minds of the people that are sworn to serve and protect, and truly when they pull somebody over and every time they get out of the car and they think, I am here to serve and protect them before I serve and protect myself, no matter what they look like, that is the hard work that still needs to be done, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this is the long, hard fight, you know? This isn't a knockout type of thing. This is jabs. And this was, you know, we saw one hell of a round. You know, we've just seen one hell of a round. But the fight is not over. So the bell rings again, and we got to get up and answer the call. We have to register. We have to vote. You know, and we have to continue to make our voices heard, not just at the streets, but in the ballot box and at city council meetings. You know, this is where we do it.
Hopefully, and if the last week is any testament to this, that it's not some of America saying, we need you to do better. It's all of us saying it.
Mm-hmm. There's so many people who have been woken up to this. You know, it's like that video of that the football player I was telling you about. It was a punch to the face. You know, mm-hmm. and sometimes you got to see it to believe it.
In addition to the cameras, Kari, I want to thank you individually because, you know, I've been spending this week just absorbing, right? And one of the voices that has stood out the most to me has been yours. because I've been listening to you for a week, both, you know, privately and then also in the public eye, talking about the hope you feel, but also the heartache that you feel. And we've known each other for a while now, right?
Yeah.
You're a good friend and we've worked together a lot. I've directed you a handful of times and but we really got to know each other doing a series, a Transformers series
together. Yeah, yeah.
And I used to go into those sessions like a 12-year-old going over to his friends for a sleepover because I'm like, fuck, I get to work with Kari again. You are so full of life and laughter and love and, you know, fucking bursting with talent. And to my anxiety-ridden eye, you know, none of us know what we're doing, but you seem to know what you're doing. You seem to be, you've always seemed to me like somebody who's on top of his game and has got the world at his fingertips because you're charming, you're talented, everything, right? Everything.
Well, I appreciate all of that. I have been playing you incredibly, but
that's
but
how good an actor
you
are.
I appreciate it.
But my point is, that has always been how I've thought of you, and to spend the last week to hear, you know, my brilliantly talented friend who has seemed to me to be on the top of the world talk about his heartache for the last week has made it more concrete to me that it's not some black men and women. It's all black men and women. Yeah. And that shouldn't have just been an intellectual idea to me in the past. It should have been real. And
it's, you know,
thank the fates or whatever it is that it now feels very fucking real.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you.
Well, you know what? Thank you for listening. Having the ear to listen, I have shed tears more than once over the last couple of weeks because I have felt heard. You know, that's all. Not anything anyone has said, but just feeling heard and feeling community, even in this, you know, moment of social distance, mm-hmm. feeling community, hearing people I didn't, because I don't expect this, you know, and maybe that's bad on my part that I'm not expecting, you know, action from other people necessarily, but to see so many people feel the call to action that I didn't ask to, but they felt compelled, you know, and I appreciate the building of that community because I need you guys, you know, we need each other, you know, but I didn't realize how much I needed you guys until this moment. It strengthens me, and it makes me feel human. And, you know, once again, that's really all we're asking for, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel like, and so, yeah, I feel a lot of hope because I do feel so much closer to that. I feel like we have taken major steps. And I hope that the things that I am saying will reach somebody who's having trouble understanding, you know, because I'm not going to claim to be like, you know, I get it, you know, where their head's at. Cause I don't really, but I know that it must be hard to be on the other side of what's happening. And look at yourself and see what's wrong, you know, when you're not used to seeing it. And, And the best thing that we can do is continue to tell them. Is to knock that thin blue line. To keep knocking at that thin blue line, because the line that where officers protect officers who shouldn't be protected. You know, if we can get that line to be protect the human beings, because those quote unquote bad officers need to be protected from themselves. They need us to keep them from doing things they will regret. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what this conversation ends up being, is about us all taking care of each other. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a tough love. And at the end of the day, if we can truly learn to do that, then and we're truly protecting and serving the other person, then that's what a social society and a social contract is all about, you know? And that's how we really build community. And so the real work begins now. Right. Mm-hmm. On the day that Brianna got her law passed, you know, the work begins now. For her.
Yep. Yep. There's still lots to do. Well, turning the page a little bit from the world at large and stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff big. Oh, man. Just how we also have been wondering. I've been wondering, you know, we talked about this a little bit when you first got going, but like, How are you doing as just a person surviving during lockdown, just like trying to, you know, you can't just watch the news all day and punch walls.
You can't
rip phone books in half all day. So yes. Like, do you have any other ways of unplugging? You said you run.
But I like, run. I got me a good playlist going, so I okay. got me, you know.
Okay, I got, what's on it? What of, you got?
I got some Outkast, okay. B.O.B. Love me some Outkast. Some Childish Gambino, Kendrick yeah. Lamar. There's Eminem. Rap God is about 7 minutes long. If you really got a long run, I suggest you put that one on.
It's a good one.
It'll get a good chunk yep. of your run done.
What kind of distance are you doing?
Just like 3 or 4 miles, you know. Yep. So like I said, I don't like to run. It is.
It's terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the worst.
I'm just trying to work my way up to something, you know. But that's the goal. And then I was doing that, and I was actually starting to enjoy. I think the music was helping me enjoy it more. And as they've loosened restrictions and said that I could go hiking again, I love to go hiking. Especially, you know, I love to go, you know, I mean, I can go, you know, like 10, 15 minutes in just about every direction and hit, you know, a mountain to climb up. And
I just went to a place called Vasquez Rocks. Have you been there?
I have not been to Vasquez Rock.
They shot
everything, like
every sci-fi movie ever made is shot
yeah.
at Vasquez.
Yeah, yeah. Where is Vasquez Rock?
It's on the way to Palmdale, I think.
They oh, okay.
either just before it or just after it.
They shot the original Star Trek there. They shot a Star Trek movie there. They shot
Pitch Black, I think. For
the something. Yeah.
Oh, no sci-fi shit. Film. Okay.
I think so.
They shot, I think, parts of the A-Team there. It's really cool. It's like you're on another planet, and it's great because it's so big and vast that you don't need to, like, come in contact with other people.
See, that's the big deal. I've been trying to find those trails that are, like, access roads for trucks to get up to the what do you call it? The towers on top of the mountain, you know?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So. And so I found a couple of those that are a little bit further away than usual because I would hike the Wisdom Tree like every other day, you know, that's right between Burbank and Hollywood. There's a tree. Maybe 15 years ago there was a fire in Griffith Park, and everything burned on that side of the mountain. Except for this little tree. And if you look on the east side of the 101, there's a little tree that's higher than all the rest of the vegetation. And you can hike up there in like, it's like 20 minutes, but it's like this, you know. So you gotta, it's a really steep, quick climb, and you can get in a nice workout. I would take my daughter and put her in a backpack and sure. and run up that thing.
Just a normal backpack, not a hiking backpack.
No. Yeah. Sport. Yeah. You know what? There's nothing worse than a toddler's, kicking you, you know, in your butt while you're trying to climb.
Well,
a thing.
If you put a trapper keeper in, it blocks that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. I just stuff them into a regular. Exactly. That's what I do.
If you're just joining us, by the way, this is Hollywood Hikes, the podcast where we talk about all of the best LA hikes.
Exactly. The only problem with that hike though is that it's very thin, you know, going up and down, and you can't really social distance. So I haven't been going back there, but there are a few around here that have a nice wide road that a maintenance vehicle can get up. And so I've been taking those to be able to look over, you know, get up on a mountain and look over the views of Los Angeles. I think, you know, honestly, that does so much for my brain.
Especially now there's no
clean
smog.
Air.
Yeah. The air is
Oh
nice.
My God.
First time ever.
I didn't even know that there was that you could ever see downtown Los Angeles from like
the ocean?
Glendale, you know? Yeah. You can see it all. It's crazy. I was
what a utopia we'd live in if we could just get rid of cars.
Exactly. Yeah, everybody says that, except they're like, if we could get rid of cars, except for the one I'm driving, then everything would be great.
I just filled up my gas tank this week for the first time in 3 months.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Whoa. How awesome. How crazy is that?
It was pretty, I felt weird to go to a gas station. I kind of forgot how the pump worked and stuff. And nobody was there. It was real
You're just
weird.
Slapping the side of your car. Why won't it work?
Trying to stuff dollars into the machine.
Yeah.
They're not going
Holy
in.
Holy shit. Yeah. So that's what I do to detox, as it were. I love, absolutely love a good hike. So I was really happy to get back to doing that. But I also was really lucky because I got my first paid writing job about like 3 months. I guess I got the job. Maybe 5 or 6 months ago, but I started working on it in late January, and
wow, that's and it, awesome!
Yeah. Well.
Is it softcore porn, or is it?
You know what? I wouldn't call it softcore.
That's amazing! Congratulations!
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Just because it was me. I did include a cuddle at the end, but for the most part,
that's good.
It's a lot of straps and studs, but
well, you heard it here, folks. They're rebooting Silk Stockings. Congratulations.
Exactly. But, I got that job I was really excited about it. And so my deadline was actually about three and a half, four weeks after everything really locked down. So, I was very, focused on that job and anxiety ridden and all of that and having, you know, wonderful moments of, oh my God, I think I'm weirdly qualified to do this. You know what I mean? There are moments of, oh shit, you know, I think I might not fuck this up, you know.
That's great.
Yeah. So
that's how all great things are done.
Yeah,
exactly. And it was, and so that was a really cool experience for me. And it also was something that I could focus on and gave me, you know, some mental, gymnastics to be able to do while I was in lockdown. So I was very lucky in that way that I actually had, you know, something to challenge
it's been,
me.
It's been really great to have just any sort of anything to pull focus, but something creative stuff has been amazing. But like, and we haven't even had a chance to talk about this on this show, Liam and I, but we both got quarantine dogs over the lockdown period.
Oh,
and so that has taken up for both of us.
Tell me, I love me some doggies. We got to talk about the doggy stories. First of all, Sam, begin. Breed.
Mine was a rescue, and the vet said that he's probably half Chihuahua, half Jack Russell Terrier, a Jack Wawa, as they're called.
Okay.
And he's
a serious
amazing.
Rat hunter is what we got here.
That's people. Right. He loves hunting for critters. His name's Rigatoni, and he has
Rigatoni.
Ears like a bat. He looks like he could fly with his ears.
Big honking ears. Yeah, he's great. He's a great dog. He's very protective of our family. Like even when my daughter comes to give me a big hug and I pick her up, he freaks out. He's like, "What is she doing? Is she attacking you? Do you need me?" You know, like he's up on his hind legs, and he's like, "What do you need me? Do you mean I'll take her down if you want me to?"
I love it so much.
And then, but Liam got his dog just before mine.
I have a mini dachshund named Sprig. He is now around 4 pounds. He's a tiny little hooligan.
He's doubled in weight.
He steals everything. He just loves to grab a thing, and then he knows what he's doing, and he runs like, "I got it! You can't stop me!" And he'll run across the yard. He bites
he's
me
so cute.
Way too much, but he is adorable. And
he sounds adorable. Neither one of these dogs sound real. These are Disney characters you're just taught. Until I see pictures, I don't believe it.
We'll text you some pictures.
Yeah, you're gonna have to text me some pictures. These sound adorable. I love it. So it's been like a month or two that you had.
I've had my dog for like 3 weeks.
For me.
Yeah.
3 weeks?
Yeah.
Dude.
This is my first dog ever.
Since
I was 10 years old. And so like I went to the dog park for the first time and I don't know the rules. I don't like what happens if your dog attacks another dog or another dog attacks you. Your dog. Do you get them off? Do you let them go? Like I don't know what to do.
You just wait to see which one survives.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. You treat them, you know, you treat them like a kid, you know. It was like, you know, you don't do that, and you grab them by the scruff as I do mine.
Mm-hmm.
And and tell them no, don't attack the other children. If I had a nickel for how many times I've told my kids, you know, don't attack the other children.
Stop attacking that dog.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like the movie Hannah.
I got some weird ideas about your dogs. So this is 3 weeks. The pooping outside, where are we? How are we doing there?
A journey.
My dog's been fine. Whoever owned this dog before me did great.
Sam's 2 years old, so he's set. It just does its own thing. Mine is brand new, is like an infant. He had Giardia for the first 3 weeks of his life, which meant he had a parasite and was just diarrhea painting the backyard.
Ooh.
And we were giving him medicine. And then we had a scare because he was prescribed something for his Giardia, which was making him drunk walk and fall down. But we didn't know what it was. We just thought something was horribly wrong with him.
Dude.
Got that sorted out. And then I'm up with him every night, like when we had our kids were babies.
Is that still going on?
Oh, yeah. It probably will be for another 3 months. I'm not sleeping.
Wait, what? Like, how many times a night do you wake up with this dog?
Three times a
night? This is a newborn baby.
Wait, how? What? Okay, so what happens? Hold on. Let's just stop for a minute.
And I'm doing it all.
What happens what wakes you up? What's the thing that wakes you up with the dog?
Early on, I was setting alarms because they said to do that so they wouldn't just pee or shit in the crate. But okay. Then I got lazy and just let him wake me up, and I hear.
And this cute. this is why, because while he's got the Giardia, is that,
or this is just now normal dog.
This is the whole time he's done this. He's doing it now. Yeah. And he's pooping fine. He's dropping loafs. He's good.
Okay. He's dropping loafs. He's good.
Yeah.
We should put some up on the Twitter for the people to see.
Okay. Sure. And we got it. Okay. Okay. So
look
so,
for my
so,
dog shit on twitter.com after this episode airs.
Now that it's not a medical thing anymore, we got to do something about this. This dog needs to be, got to be able to sleep through the night. It's how old is the dog? Is it?
He is 12 weeks.
Oh shit. Yeah. You got another, I don't even know what to do with that, man.
Nothing. I'm just repaying the favor to my wife. I'm doing 100% of the nighttime, 97.5% of the nighttime duty.
Okay. Well, just as long as once you're through this ordeal, you just need to make sure you train this dog to be able to kill for you if need be. You know,
that'd be hilarious.
It's a 4-pound dog, so
he'll be 10 pounds someday.
I'm not saying.
Come on now.
Listen, the dog is up late at night. You know, he's tiny. He can sneak into a house. He can be a clandestine assassin.
He's a ninja. Mm-hmm. He's a shinobi.
He is a rogue already. And we all know it's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight.
Fighting the dog. Exactly. Put a little mask on that dog. He'll only be more adorable.
Oh, yes, he will. Yeah, a little Donatello mask.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, that would be great.
I got to see pictures of these dogs, man.
We'll post them. I've got the green screen behind me. We'll put some posters.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Here they are right now. Here's Sam's dog. Uh-huh. Look at that guy. And then here's my little guy. He's so little.
They fight. No, they fight.
Grab him by the scruff. There you go. Yeah. See, you guys got this. It's going to be just
fine. Yeah, we got this. We got this.
I love it.
Yeah, well.
You guys got plenty of stuff to deal with. What you
and your people are going through is rough, but we got dogs.
My dog has Giardia, Kari. Giardia. Yeah. Hey.
Oh, my God. That literally sounds like, I'm pretty sure that world that the people came from in Battlestar Galactica.
No, it's a character in Super Mario Brothers.
Okay.
Giardia, let's go. Kari, thank you for joining us, and really thank you for your experience and your passion and for your perspective.
Dude, thanks for letting me. Just talk and let my perspective be, be put out there because I meant that, that I said, I needed this. I need you guys. This was an incredible experience for me, to know that I have a voice that I can say these things that need to be said, and we're hearing them all different kinds of ways, the thing is I fucking love this country. I fucking love this country, and not because of what it's done for me. I love this country because I have to. I refuse to not love this place that is the home of my birth. That the people who have come before me have worked too hard and too long for me not to love the struggle that they set forth And that's what I want people to understand, because so many times they say, well, if you don't like it, why don't you go somewhere else? I didn't come here of my volition, and I am not leaving of my volition. This is my home. And it gives me hope, and it gives me strength. And I'm not going anywhere. So thank you for letting me say that. It means so much to me. You have no idea.
Well, it means a lot that you came on and did this, you know, and a lot of people are going through this time in different ways, and some people want to just kind of shut down and close the door and be by themselves. And it takes a lot of strength to, you know, share your feelings with us while other people watch and be honest and stuff. And we appreciate that. And thank you for everything. Yeah. Thanks for everything you've said tonight.
I appreciate you. It's been great. Thanks for, I can't wait to get back together, guys. I can't wait to meet the dogs.
I know. Whew. You know, maybe before the end of the year. I don't know. Maybe not.
I don't know. If you ever want to go on a socially distant run, hit me up.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. Liam's a great runner.
Used to be. God damn you.
Used to be.
Yeah. He actually likes it sometimes.
See, that's what's killing me. You know, I like. You know what? I'll take you up on it. I will. You'll lap me a couple of times, but I'll get out there. I'll get out there. I'll give you a ring.
That sounds okay, great. When you hear a pop, that's my knee flying off.
It's okay. You got another one.
Well, thanks to everyone for watching this special episode of AWNP Unpeed. Yeah. We love you all. Please reach out to each other. Check in with your friends. If this quarantine and this moment of tumult in this country has taught us anything, we are all in this together. We have to watch each other's backs and let each other know that we care about each other and are here for each other. And so hope you pass that on. Mm. We love you all.
Love you.
Appreciate it.
Hey, friends. This is Liam O'Brien. Thank you for listening to AWNP Unplugged. If you enjoyed the episode, please consider leaving us a review on whatever podcasting app you're using. It really helps us support the show and might even bring new listeners our way. Remember, you can watch AWNP Unplugged every other Tuesday on twitch.tv/criticalrole at 7 p.m. Pacific. Or stick with listening to the audio version of the show the following Tuesday, right here on the All Work No Play podcast feed. With all that said, thank you for hanging out. Stay connected, stay safe, and remember, friends, don't work too hard.